say we're beginning here on the bottom of Samach Vav and Bet, four lines up. Amar Rava, Isha lo ta'amod al gabei klei cheres v'tidbo. A woman should not be standing on top of any pottery, clay utensils when she's going to the mikveh. Savar Rav Kahana lemeimar, time am I? Rav Kahana thought the reasoning behind Rava's position was shum gzerot machseot, because of the problem of bathhouses. Huh? And from that you would conclude, or that you would infer, al gabei silta shapir dami. It was done on top of a wood, or a log of wood, then it would not be a problem. So according to Rashi, the main issue here is that in the merchtaot, in the bathhouses, they have these small pillars, these low-lying pillars that people used to sit on as part of their bathing process or in the bathing process. And since that was similar to the klei cheres, or having utensils that are in the mikveh, people might come to the mistaken conclusion that just like I can do this in the mikveh, I can do this in the bathhouse. The mikveh doesn't look very different than the bathhouse anymore. And so they could be interchangeable, which is not the case, because the bathhouse is not a kosher mikveh, whereas the mikveh obviously is. That's the way Rashi reads it. The Bai Tosafot, just in a small Tosafot, say that kli cheres are part of zerot machtzeot, not because of their utility in terms of standing on them or sitting on them, but because the kli cheres are used in the heating of the water and bringing in the hot water. So if you have kli cheres in the mikveh, it looks like something no different than the merchtaot, where they're heating up the water and they're bringing in the water. So Tosafot sees it more uniquely associated with kli cheres because of their utility inside of the merchtaot, because of the heating of the water. Rashi sees it as a more generic problem of any kli that you stand on that makes it feel like or simulate the effect of being in the merchtaot. So when it's on top of something that's stable and a kli, that feels like the little pillars that they have in the merchtaot. When you're on top of a log, according to the Bali Tosafot, that's not something used in the heating of the water. And according to Rashi, it's because it's not a stable item that simulates that which you find in the merchtaot. But Amalei Rav Chanan Minardo, Hatam Taimamai, that's not the reason why it's problematic, but rather this is the reason, Mishum Deboit. Because if the woman is on top of the kli cheres, she doesn't feel stable in the water, and she's afraid. Siltanami bito. And similarly, with a log of wood, if she's standing on it, she'd also be afraid. I guess the idea being that they didn't necessarily know how to swim, and if the mikveh was deep, then the woman entering into the mikveh would be afraid to fall off whatever object she's on, because then she'd be unsupported in the mikveh. And so there'd be no difference between a kli cheres that was propping her up in the mikveh and a log that was propping her up in the mikveh. Because she's in a state of fear, she won't go to the mikveh properly. She'll do an expedited tefillah in the mikveh, which she won't get herself entirely into the mikveh, or she'll be afraid of slipping off whatever she's standing on, and that will cause problems in terms of her tefillah, because she just won't do it properly. And in that case, then it makes no difference whether you're talking about a kli cheres or a log of wood. If the fear is the matter, then it is equally applicable to either one of those items. Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Isha lo tidvol binamal, woman should not go to the mikveh in a port. Afagav the hashta leka, even though right now there's nothing on her. Imer birdione nafal. We will say, Rashi over here says with regards to the word birdione, ani yodea lishono, I don't know what it really means. Venira. But he says, I think it means shehu lashon shichshuch. It is a lashon of rubbing against each other, against some sort of friction, and that when she comes out of the mikveh, she rubs her legs against herself, against her body, or the waters that she's taking out with her, and that causes the item to fall away. It's not clear here what the problem is in the Namal, and in all likelihood it's connected to the next statement of the Gemara as well, and that's influential not only here, but we've seen in the Gemara in Bechorot, the Gemara in Shabbat, the Gemara in Nedarim, that has the next Gemara upcoming in all of those Gemarot. But there it's isolated. It's not with the previous statement over here. The Tosafot there in all those places notes the issue of Namal being right before juxtaposed to the upcoming problem, and therefore explains them in a context that involves both of those restrictions. And that is, Rashi says the problem in the Namal is the fact that there is tit, that there is, whether it's lime, there is clay, there's something that is quasi-porous, but sticky, that is in the port. That either is because of the fact that the boats or the heavy boats raise up or bring in this type of tit, or because of the nature of the depth of the port and then the sudden rise towards the shoreline, maybe because of that, there's a more solid face to it and there is this clay or tit that is there. So because of that, we are afraid that the woman going into the water will then be not in the water, but rather in the tit, or caught in the thickness of that which is there. So Rashi seems to indicate that the problem is that when she goes to the mikveh, she's going to sink her feet into the clay, into the tit that is there. And because of that, she won't be in the mikveh. She'll be in the dirt or the clay that's down below. And that'll be a chatzitza that won't allow her to be yotzei with this tefillah. And why, when she comes out, do we not see it? Is because on the way out, your legs rub against each other, or the water washes off whatever was on your legs, and you won't be able to see the chatzitza that's there. Others say that it was not necessarily because of the clay at the base that you're going to be in contact with, but on the body. Because there's teeth, or there's lime, that is lime or plaster that's around that area, that it tends to get on the person when they're entering into the water. And therefore, when she went into the water, there was something on her body. And then when she left the water, it fell off. And so even though right now you look at it, and even before she entered, you looked at her and she was without a chatzitza. And when she exits, she's without a chatzitza. The problem is, in the interim, there might have been a chashash that some teeth got on her body. Or because she pressed her feet into the depths of the base of the port. And that causes a chatzitza. That's Rashi's explanation. The Rosh raises a serious issue with this because the Mishnah in Mikvaot, in Perek Tet, notes when it comes to a mitah, a bed that one wants to put into the mikveh in order to be mitaher, the bed, then when they place it into the mikveh, even though the feet of the bed sink into the base, the sediment in the river or the mikveh that's there, that's not a problem because they either kadam, raglaim, lamaim, the legs went in the water first, so on the descent, they were already in the water. Or because of the fact that when they go into the base that's there, the water precedes them into that base. And therefore, it will be considered as if they were in the mikveh. So you see over there that having teet or having clay at the base of the river is not a problem of chatzitza. So that's the Rosh's question with regards to this. The Rosh himself brings a distinction between the cases in order to reconcile that, and that is that there's a difference between a human being and kelim. Kelim, especially like a mitah, like a bed, the feet of the bed are smooth and straight, and therefore they don't have a problem of chatzitza because they go in simply, and the water either precedes them or can surround them, and there's no chatzitza. A person has toes, has bends, and different areas where there's pressure between the toes, between the feet, things like that that cause other problems of chatzitza that are not there when you have a bed that is just a smooth leg. That's the distinction that the Rosh makes. Others make distinctions along the lines of where you are found. The Rosh Mishantz knows that there's different types of clay or different types of tit that exist. And therefore, the Rosh Mishantz says that the difference between the Mishnah and Mikvaot is that the tit there is just regular teeth or thick clay or sediment at the bottom of the river. Whereas when we're speaking about what he calls tit yavan, or a very thick and sticky type of sediment or clay that's at the base of the river, that's problematic. And it seems that that's found in the areas of the ports, that type of clay or that type of sediment is there. And that's why there is an issue. That's another distinction brought by the Rosh Mishantz. Arriving in answering that question notes that maybe the problem here is not in the river itself, but rather on your way into the river. And therefore, the problem by the port is that the area around the port before you enter into the water, that's where there's the sticky clay teeth that can get on you before you enter into the water. And that's why there's an issue as opposed to the Mishnah Mikvaot, which is talking about in the water itself. And that's another distinction that can be made. That's one way to deal with this whole sugya. And the distinction with the Mishnah and Mikvaot. Then the Balei HaTosafot over here and in other places bring that the Rabbeinu Tam favors the explanation of the Rabbeinu Hananel, and that is that the problem over here is not a problem of the tit or the clay that's in the port, but rather the problem is the port itself. The port itself is an active area. There are many people around in the port. And because of that, a woman would be afraid to go to the mikveh because of all the spectators that are there. And that's the problem. We're afraid the woman's going to go into the mikveh so fast and get out so fast that she won't be tovelet properly because she's afraid of other people seeing her. And therefore, it's a matter of tzniut, matter of the publicity surrounding her entering into the mikveh. And that's why there's a problem. Now, that version, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, has a different girsa in our Gemara, and that is Isha lo tidvol b'namal, period. You can't have the subsequent statement, which is Apagav dehashtaleka imar birduyune nafal. That statement, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, is not in the Gemara. And the only statement is that you can't go into the port. And then he says the reason you can't go into the port is because it's a public venue, and that's the issue. It has nothing to do with the fact that something might have fallen off your body, something that was on before, or during the time you're in the mikveh fell off before you got out. That's not a relevant statement according to the Rabbeinu Chananel's explanation. And therefore, obviously, the Rabbeinu Chananel's girsa does not have this additional statement. According to our Gemaras that do have that statement in there, then it favors heavily the way that Rashi is explaining it versus the way that the Rabbeinu Chananel is explaining it. Then the next statement of the Gemara we will explain now, but it have to remember it's in the context of the previous statement of the Gemara, and your explanation of the previous piece will influence what you say in this piece. And that is Avod Shmuel, Aved Vnate Mikvaot Beyom Nisan. Shmuel's father, who is a first generation or even a bridge generation between the Tanaim and Amoraim, he was very close with Rabbi. He might have worked by Rabbi at some point. He came to Bavel. He was one of the Gdolei Bavel. Obviously, his son, Shmuel, in his erudition and in his leadership, therefore he's not known by his own name, but rather by his son's name, and that's why it's called Avua de Shmuel. But he is Ava de Vinate. He did for his daughters, which seemingly are the sisters of Shmuel, mikvaot biyomei Nisan, put together mikvaot in the period of Nisan, umatze, and he used to put together these mats in the days of Tishrei. So, well, let's explain the matze, because that connects more directly to the previous statement. Question is, why do you need mats in Tishrei? Tishrei is the end of the summer season. It is the low point in terms of the water flow of the rivers. It's before the rainy season has arrived. It is when the Mayanot are at their lowest and the rivers generally are at their lowest. And he put in Matze at that time. Rashi, continuing his Perush from the Namal, says the problem was at that point in time with the riverbeds so low and the amount of sediment and dirt that had collected at the base, then they had the same problem that you had in the port, which is that the feet of the women would go into the bed of the river. And that would be a chatzitza. So he put matze, he put these mats that were made out of reeds at the base of the river in order that they could walk in the river without having their feet sink into the river or be a chatzitza. So Rashi sees this as being a parallel to the previous case, which is we're worried about the chatzitza at the base of the river. And therefore he put in mats to prevent that problem from happening. The other nuanced version of that is like what the Raivud said before, which is that the Ravid said the problem was not in the river itself, or not in the port itself, but on your way into the port, or on your way into the river, that you might pick up this clay tit and have it stick to your body as you're going into the mikveh. So in the port, you can't go because there's no way to deal with it. Over here in the rivers, the Avod de Shmuel dealt with that by putting down mats, not in the river itself where they were going to the mikveh, but on the entrance or the way into the river, he put down the mats so that when they walked into the river, that their feet would not get caught up in the mud or get mud that stuck to their feet on the way into the river. That again is the explanation that follows in the previous case of Namal, the problem being tit, being the clay, that which is at the base of the port or that which is on the entry into the port. The problem is the same problem that we're trying to deal with here, and the matze deal with that. The Rabbeinu Tam, who brings the Rabbeinu Chananel, notes that the Rabbeinu Chananel's explanation of matze over here is similar to his explanation by the port. By the port, he said, the problem is that there are too many people in the port, and therefore the woman does a quick vilah because she's afraid of being seen, and that's the problem. Similarly, in Yemei Tishrei, where it's the hot season and people are out and about near the rivers, then the same problem exists for the women, which is they have no tzniut. So the matze were not mats that he put on the ground, but matze were walls that he put up, create a private area where his girls could go to the mikveh and not be afraid of other people being around or other people seeing them. So that would be the matze biyom Tishrei, which is parallel to the previous case as well, which is it's a matter of tzniut. It's a matter of making them feel comfortable that when they go into the mikveh, that nobody else is looking or they don't have to rush because of the exposure that they are subjected to. That's the way that the Rabbeinu Hananel explains it. The first part of Avad Shmuel, which is that he made them mikvaot and Yomei Dinitsan, Rashi over here explains, he does this here and many other places in Shas, explains that there's a fundamental difference in the way that one can become tahor. There is a way to become tahor, which is a mikveh, or what we call ashboren. It's a pool of water that is collected and still. It's not flowing water. It is water that is standing water that is collected in a basin for the purpose of being a mikveh. Now that source of the water has to be rain, and it has to be rainwater that came into that area and that was captured in that basin, or it can be river waters that were captured into this basin or this pool that is the mikveh. The key element of the mikveh is that it's bashboren, that it's collected and it's not moving, it's not a flowing area. On the other hand, there's another way to become tahor, and that's what's called mayim chayim. That's a live spring. And a live spring, you can be mitahir yourself. First of all, there is no minimum shiur of 40 sa'ah. It can even be a smaller amount. And number two is that it can even be mezochalim, even if it's flowing. The water is moving, then waters that come from a mayan are successful at creating tahara. Now, certain tumot, like a zav, have a requirement of the mayim chayim in order to become tahor. That it's not enough that they go to the mikveh, they actually have to go to a live spring to become tahor. Rashi points out here, Tosafot seconds that that's only true by a zav, that's not true by a zava. So as far as women are concerned, mayim chayim, or a live spring, is not a requirement or necessary prerequisite for them becoming tahorim from the issues of zava, and of course not from the issues of nida. So what Rashi explains over here is that the rivers have different flows of water during the different seasons. At the end of the year, by Tishrei, when there hasn't been rain for a good period of time, then the water that's flowing the river is coming directly from the Mayan. That's the only source of water in the river. And therefore, the river can be used as a mikveh, not in the traditional sense of a mikveh, by a shboren, by pooling the water or collecting the water, but simply by the flow of the river. You can get into the river and the flowing water is a mayan, and therefore is mitaher bezochalin. And then in Yemei Nisan, which is the end of the rainy season, then the rivers are much higher. The levels of the river are much higher at that point, and that's because there are two different contributing factors to the swelling of the river. There's the base mayan, the base spring that is feeding the river, as well as the rain waters that have come on top of that. The rain has added to the flow of water, and therefore now you have a mixture of rainwater and spring water. The problem is that rainwater is not mitaher bezochalin in a movement when it's flowing. Rainwater only is mitaher b'mikveh when it's bashboren, when it's collected into a singular pool. And so what Avod Shmuel was afraid of during the Nisan period was that the rainwaters would exceed the zochalin, the mayan waters, the spring waters that were in the river. Given that, then it was not permissible to go to the mikveh in the river, in the flowing river. So what he would do is divert some of the water from the river into a pooling area, into an ashboren, to make a mikveh, so that his daughters could go to the mikveh there. And even if the rainwaters were the majority and not the mayan, it would be a sufficiently proper mikveh because of the fact that it's ashboren, it's collected. Now, obviously, a mayan can also, if you collect the waters, it can be made into a mikveh, so there's no downside in doing that. You just have to do it in order to avoid the problem of going in the river when there's more rainwater than there is spring water, and therefore you'd be trying to be mitahir yourself bezochalim with flowing waters, which doesn't work with regards to ashboren or a mikveh. And Rashi brings the relevant limudim from Torat Kohanim that distinguish between a mayan and a mikveh, that give us this distinction between zochalin, flowing waters that work by a mayan, versus ashboren that works by a mikveh, which is a collected pool of water. And that's what Abu Adishmo was doing for his daughters. Rav Gidol Marav, Natnatav Shilivna, if she was working with a dish of some sort, she was cooking something, and she handed it off to her son, Vitavla, and then went into the mikveh, Va'alta, and then came out of the mikveh, Lo Altala Tvila. That's not a successful tefillah. Avagav the hashtaleka, even though now we look at her and her body seems totally clean and there's no chatzitza, ema birdione nafal. Let us say because of the friction, the activity that she underwent in going into the mikveh and coming out of the mikveh caused that item to fall off. What we're suggesting over here is that the woman working with the tafshil, if she did this all the way up to her entering into the mikveh, something might have gotten on her from the work that she was doing with whatever cooking she was doing, and that stuck to her body, and that causes a chatzitza when she goes into the mikveh. And even though now we don't see any chatzitza after the mikveh, there still might be a problem because it might have come off when she went into the mikveh or when she was descending from the mikveh, and therefore it was there when she entered the mikveh, even though it's not there when she exited the mikveh. And then obviously we're talking about a type of tashil that is sticky and that would harden on the body and create a chatzitza. So our fear is if she works with or is engaged with the tashil immediately prior to entering into the mikveh, that that might cause the problem. In this girsa over here, you can see why the birdununei nafal is relevant. Well, the question is if that girsa also belongs before by the namal, but Rashi has it in the girsa, and that's the way our Gemaras have it. Whereas Rabbeinu Chananel did not have it in that girsa there. The Rabbeinu Chananel, a Balei Tosfot note, has an additional line in the Gemara over here, which is another restriction with regards to the mikveh, which is that v'zohi, this is similar to the case of mafshelet ebina bitovelet, that a woman who throws her child onto her back, goes into the mikveh, lo alta la tvila. She does not successfully enter into the mikveh or have a tvila. Now, it could be, as Tosafot says over here, the woman is naked, and she has her son on her back. It could be that the chatzitza is the son himself that is holding onto her back, riding on her back when she goes into the mikveh, although that seems unlikely because they're not so tightly stuck together that the waters can't enter over there, or that the water of the mikveh can't get in. And therefore, that would be unlikely that that is the real reason as to why. Rather, the more likely explanation, this is what Tosafot explains over here, is that the child is dirty, or the child has gotten into teeth, and therefore when the child climbs onto his mother's back, or she throws him onto her back, the teeth from the baby or the child gets on the mother, and that causes a chatzitza. And similar to the way that we said before, even though we don't see anything now, that is because when she went into the mikveh and then ascended, on her way out, those items fell away and took away the chatzitza that was there when she went into the mikveh. And so that's the worry, and that's what Rabbeinu Chananel brings as an additional case that he had in his girsa of his gemara that was exerat chachamim, preventing women from going to the mikveh in these circumstances because of the risks of chatzitza. We saw here three different problems. One was the namal, the other one is the tavshil, and the third one, according to Rabbeinu Chananel, is the case of the child that is with her. In between, we had avuah d'shmuel, which we have to explain in that context as to whatever the problem is by namal. Was also the issue by avuah d'shmuel with regards to the maftze in Yom HaTishrei. And then in Yom HaNisan, the mikveh, we explained the difference between Ashboren and Zochalim. Amar Rabbi Bar Abba, or the other girs over here is Amar Rami Bar Chamo. Hanei Ravdei de Kuslita, the scab, or the wound that is left by the blood letter on the shoulder, Atlata Yome Lo Chaitze. For the first 3 days, it is not chutzeitz, because it's well stuck onto the body. The scab is not going to loosen up or doesn't release at all. It's part and parcel of the body, and therefore it's not classified as a chatzitza. Mikan ve'elech, after 3 days already, where the scab starts to loosen and it doesn't hold on to the body so tightly, then already it becomes a chaitze. It becomes a chatzitza for the woman because it's not something that is part and parcel of her body anymore. It's almost an exogenous item that is stuck to the body. In that case, it needs to be scraped off or wiped off before you go into the mikveh, otherwise it acts as a chatzitza. Amar Marukva, lifluf sheba'ayin, if you have dirt or crustiness in the eye, lach, if it is moist, eno chotzeitz, then it's not a chatzitza. Yavesh, on the other hand, if it is dried out, chotzeitz, then it is a chatzitza. Ematai nikra yavesh, when is it called dried out? To the time that it becomes green or a really yellowish color. And as Tosfot points out over here, with regards to these items, it's dafka ba'ayin. It's only true in the eye, because the eye has a continuous flow of moisture because it tears. And therefore, something that has lichluch, or is a moist issue, then we don't worry about it continuing to be there because the eye will keep it moist and not let it dry out. On the other hand, if you have some of this dirt or crustiness outside of the eye, even if it is moist, it is chotzeitz, because it won't remain in that state, and it will actually dry in that state, and therefore becomes a chatzitza. And so that's a distinction that the Balei Tosafot point out, that if it is moist, it is only not problematic inside the eye. If it is dry, it's a problematic in the eye. Anywhere else, it's a problem, whether it's moist or dry, it's problematic. Now Gemara says, Amar Shmuel, Kachol Shibatoch Ayin, the stibium, which was this blue eye makeup that they used to put in the eye, if it's in the eye itself, Eino Chotzeitz, then it's not problematic. Sha'al Gabe Ayin, if it's on top of the eyelid, then it is Chotzeitz. Ima Yueneha Porchot, Afilo Gabe Ayin, Eino Chotzeitz. If the eyes, and this Rashi brings two possibilities as to what Porchot means over here, Potechet Votzemet Tadir, if she opens and closes her eyes on a regular basis, then it's not chutzetz, because the opening and closing of the eye on a continuous basis causes this eye makeup to fall away or to be absorbed into the eye, and therefore it's no longer a chatzitza, so that's even on top of the eye. Or Rashi brings a lishna achrina domat, in a case where a woman who tears on a regular basis, that the tearing causes the makeup or the stibium that's on the eye to moisten and fall away or not be a chatzitza anymore. So the first aspect is if it is in the eye, it's not considered to be a chatzitza. If it's on top of the eye, then it is a chatzitza. Ela im kein, there's something that you're doing with the eye that causes it not to be a chatzitza, and that's either, according to Rashi, you are opening and closing it on a regular basis, or the other possibility, which is the eye is tearing on a regular basis that keeps it moist and will have it either be removed or make it moist enough that it's not a chatzitza. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says, Patchai ne'a biyoter, a woman who opens her eyes too wide, o atzma ne'a biyoter, or she holds her eyes too tightly closed, lo altala tvila, then the tvila is not successful, because if she opens her eyes too wide open and holds them in that position, their problem is that then there's a chatzitza up above by the eyelid being up in its socket and then so tightly packed that it doesn't allow the water to get in there. And the same with closing one's eye. If it is closed very tightly, then down below in the area where it's sealed or tight, then also doesn't allow the water to enter over there, and therefore it becomes a chatzitza. And then Reish Lakish says, Amar Reish Lakish, Jisha lo tidbol ela derech gdelata. A woman should only go into the mikveh the way that she grows. It doesn't necessarily mean the way that she grows, but mean in a natural fashion. She should go in a normal fashion, not anything where she's in an unusual position or doing anything unusual. She just goes in the most natural form. Kidetnan, like we have a Mishnah in Nigaim, it speaks about the Kohen that is looking for a nega on an individual, whether it's a man or a woman, he's looking for the nega. Now, the Kohen looks at the person in normal positions. He doesn't look at the person and make them lift up their arms, open up their legs to see all those places that are what are called their beta starim, areas that are normally covered. He doesn't make them do that. They just do it in the natural position. Ha'ish nir'eh ke'oder u'ke'mosek zeitim. A man does what he normally would do. Oder is that he's hoeing, or he's using a spade in the field. When he works like that, as Rashi notes over here, he exposes his underarm. The amount that he exposes his underarm in that work, that's how much the Kohen looks at. So if he does or acts like he's being Oder, like he's hoeing, or he is using a spade in the field, that's how much of the underarm is exposed, and the Kohen should be able to see in that way. If he can't see it, and when the exposure of the underarm is that far, then that's it. You don't have to raise your hand further for him to see into the Beit HaShechi. It's considered to be a Makom HaNistar. And Mosek Zeitim is someone who's picking up olives. Rashi claims over here that if there are olives on the ground that fell off the tree and he's picking those olives up, then that's the exposure of Beit HaErva, the private parts of the individual. There, however he bends down, that's the type of exposure that he would have that the Kohen can see the Nega or not see the Nega. He doesn't have to open up any more than that. He doesn't have to spread out any more than that for the Kohen to take a look at that nega. And similarly, by Nisha, near et ke'oreget, ukemenikad bina, has the same type of idea that she should be in natural positions when he's looking for the nega. Rashi says again, oreget is when she is weaving, and that exposes her underarms, similar to the man, where the underarm is exposed in the work that he's engaged in. Since this is the normal work of the woman, this is a natural stance which would expose her underarm. She acts like she's weaving to see what type of exposure she would have, and that's what the Kohen looks at. Doesn't look any more carefully than that. And then Rashi claims, with regards to Minikat Bina, while she is nursing her child, where she bends over the child in order to nurse the child, that exposes the Beit HaErva, again, her private parts down below, That's the amount or the extent of the exposure that happens. And if the Kohen can see it in that case, then it is considered to be a nega. If you can't see it, it's Beit HaStarim, and it's not an issue. That's the way Rashi explains it. And then the Balei Tosafot, based on a number of other things that we'll discuss in a minute, suggests that that's not the explanation of Menikat Bina. Rather, Menikat Bina has to do with the folds of the breasts on the chest of the woman, that underneath there, there's a Beit HaStarim. And how carefully do you have to look at that Beit HaStarim? So here the Mishnah gives you the qualification, which is Menikat Bina. When she is nursing her child, the amount of exposure that happens in the nursing process, that's how much of the breast needs to be exposed in order to check. Otherwise, you do not need to check any more carefully. So they're bringing the Mishnah in Nigaim as to the definition of Beit HaStarim. And Beit HaStarim has the same ramifications with regards to Mikveh, because by Mikveh, you don't have to have the Beit HaStarim be any more exposed than they would be in their natural stance. And so it brings you the Mishnah in Nigaim, which tells you what is considered to be natural exposure. And that's what Reish Lakish is suggesting. When the woman goes to the mikveh, that she should go into the mikveh in a natural form. She shouldn't have her legs too tightly together. She spreads them out a little bit. She opens up her body in a similar fashion to the way she would do it in activities that she would normally be engaged in. So now, Tosafot brings over here that the Rabbeinu Hananel had a girsa in some of the Sfarim that the Gemara concluded over here, V'leit hilchata kochol hanish maitata, that the halacha is not like any of these memrot that we brought all the way here through the Amoraim as to the issues of chatzitza, t'chit merhani, because all of these issues that were mentioned here are l'tarot. That's only dinim with regards to tarot. Those are chumrot with regards to tarot. Aval l'bala, when it comes to being tahor for her husband, then she is tahora. So the assumption based on that girsa of the Rabbeinu Hananel is that all of these are chumrot that we do not have to abide by, because these are chumrot that are associated with tarot and not associated with a woman becoming tahora for her husband. And therefore, none of them are applicable, with the exception of Reish Lakish, who said at the end that a woman has to enter in a natural fashion. And then the Balei Tosafot bring from a tshuva of Rashi that lo gar sinan, that statement that the Rabbeinu Hananel brings that is in our Gemara, Rashi says is incorrect and that it should be eliminated from the girsa. And it gives a number of reasons for that. Now, first of all, it is, what does the statement of Reish Lakish have anything to do with that statement? Maybe that when the Gemara makes the statement that the halacha is not like all of those previous statements of the Gemara, because that's for tarot, with the exception of Reish Lakish that is relevant by Ba'ala. And the question is, what does Reish Lakish's statement have to do with anything about the memorot that are above? It's a totally separate statement. It has nothing to do with the memorot above. But in this girsa, it connects between Reish Lakish's statement and the previous statement, saying all the previous statements are not necessary, yet Reish Lakish is necessary. But why is there any connection, or why would you even draw any parallel that you need to make that statement? So Rashi says that's the first problem with the girsa. The second problem with the girsa is all the Balei Memrot and the problems before were Rav Gidol, Rami Bar Chama, who were all Amoraim in Bavel. And in Bavel, the issue was Tara for Bala, and not Tarot, because they weren't necessarily keeping Tarot, or they weren't keeping Tuma in Bavel. And therefore, those Amoraim are clearly speaking to the people of Bavel. You're not going to say that they're speaking for the people who are in Eretz Yisrael. They're giving them instructions about Tahara. That doesn't make sense, that you have all these Amoraim in Bavel speaking to the people of Eretz Yisrael, when the own people in Bavel are the ones that they're teaching. And therefore, it makes more sense to say that they're speaking about Tahara for Bala than speaking about Tarot in general. In addition, Rashi points out that all the Memrot that we brought in the Gemara before are brought with Lashon Nekeva. They're brought in the female conjugation. And the reason being is because it has to do with an Isha for Ba'ala. It's not a Stam Din in Tarot, which would be equally applicable to men and women with regards to Tarot, but rather it's an issue for women. That issue that's uniquely associated with women would be the issue of being Tara Lebala. And therefore, again, Rashi thinks that the statements here are all made about and relevant for a woman who is going to the mikveh to be tahora for her baal, and that all of these have application over there. And then he brings also an additional proof from the Gemara in Yevamot, and therefore Rashi, as Tosafot concludes, says, V'chein perish Rashi b'tshuvato, t'chol chumrot, t'ach shmaitato, all the chumrot that are mentioned that we noted in today's daf, that they're no'agot achshav, they're relevant today, b'tvilat nida lebala, when a woman goes to the mikveh in order to be Torah for her husband. Aval, Of course, Rabbeinu Tam, his grandson, disagrees, and Perish Shinira Kigirsa Esfarim. He upholds the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Chanano, and we saw him favoring the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Chanano back by the case of Namal before. And over here again, he favors the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Chanano. Itanami Perish Rabbeinu Chanano. It's found in the Rabbeinu Chanano. It's also found in the Halachot Gedolot, in the Bahag, Bechilkot Nidash Perish Rav Sadio, and also in the Halachot of Nidav that Rav Sadio published. All of these include this statement that the Rabbeinu Chanano says. Therefore, Avalhana Chumre, the Kli Cheres, the Silta, the Namal, Umafse, Umafshelet, the Ribda, the Lifluf, She Machmirot Yoter Min HaMishnah. Those are all Chumrot that are more stringent than that which we find in the Mishnah in Perek Tet and Mikvaot. And therefore he says, all of these Chumrot are not Lahalacha. They are relevant by Tarot, but they are not relevant by a woman going to the mikveh to be Torah for Bala, except for the Chumrah of Reish Lakish that is applicable even by Bala. And then the Tosva goes on to explain why there is maybe some questions in this position of Rabbeinu Tam, and he tries to answer those questions. But there is a fundamental machloket here as to whether these items or these Chumrot are relevant to us today and relevant to a woman that is trying to be Torah the Bala. The Balei Tosfot say over here, therefore we should teach all women who go to the mikveh, shelo tikvo v'tiftach einah, lo tatzim einah biyoter. Like we saw in the Gemara here, according to Rashi, at least, then you should make sure the women don't close their eyes too tightly, don't open their eyes too widely. In addition, he says, according to everyone, even according to the Rabbeinu Tam, then you have to teach the women to open up their mouths a little bit, not because the water actually has to go into their mouths, but it has to be ra'ui lebiat amayim. It has to be something where it could enter, or the water could get into the mouth, as we saw in yesterday's daf with regards to the chatzitza and the teeth, that it doesn't mean that the water has to get in there, but it has to be a makom that is ra'ui lebiat amayim. And if you hold your lips pressed too tightly together, then it's not a makom that's ra'ui likanes amayim, or that water can get in there. And that would be a problem, according to everyone, in terms of going to the mikveh. Now the Gemara continues. Amar Rabba Bar Rav Huna. Nima achat kshura chotzetzet. If you have one strand of hair that is tied, then it is a chatzitza, because the water can't get in to that area. Shalosh ein chotzetzet. If you have three hairs that are tied onto themselves, then they're not chotzetzet, because there you can't make it as tight. If you take a single thread of hair and tie it to itself, when you pull it, that knot that you've made is very tight and doesn't allow the water to get in there. The thicker the rope is, and over here, the thicker you have if you use three strands of hair and do the same thing, loop them on themselves and then tie a knot, it won't be as tight because you have three hairs there. That allows the water to go in, and therefore it's not a chatzitza. Shtayim, with regards to two, any yodea. I don't know what the halacha is. I know for sure one is a chatzitza. I know three are not a chatzitza. I don't know what the din is with regards to two. Yochan Amar, anu ein lenu ela achat. We only have the issue of one, which means that only one hair is a problem. It's not clear here how Rabbi Yochanan's statement references back that we saw by Rabbi Bar Rav Huna, because is he arguing in Rabbi Bar Rav Huna and saying that only one is chotzeitz, two is not chotzeitz, and therefore the conclusion from the Gemara here would be that two is not a chatzitza. All he's saying is, I'm certain like you that by one it is a chatzitza. I'm not sure also by two or by three. And therefore the halacha would remain that two is a safek, because we don't know what the din is with regards to two hairs. As a machlok in the Rishonim has had to read Rabbi Yochanan's response to Rabbi Bar Rav Huna over here. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Dvar Torah. As Rashi notes over here, Dvar Torah is not something written in the Torah, but rather it's halacha de Moshe Misinai. This is the halacha with regards to chatzitzot. This is the principle that we follow. Rubo hamakpid alav chotzeitz. If it is the majority and you're makpid on it, it is a chatzitza. Rashi over here says rubo means rov se'aro. The majority of the hair, kashur achat achat, are tied one at a time. So that means that it's a chatzitza when it is the majority. So Rashi seems to be indicating that the rov over here is governed by the head and not the entirety of the body. Question as to whether it means rov of the hair on the body, or the rov of the body, or maybe independently the rov of the head and the rov of the body, each one independently can reach a rov. And that is a discussion amongst the Rishonim. You can see Rashi over here favoring the rov sa'aro. And again, it's not clear whether he means just the hair of the head, or he means the rov of the hair of the body, or whether he means that to the exclusion of Rov Gufo. So that's all discussed in the Rishonim as to what is meant over here by Rov. Either way, it's very hard to have a chatzitza midoraita because you have two requirements. One is that it has to be the robe, either of your head, or the robe of your body that has the chatzitza on it. In addition, it has to be something that you're makpid on, something that bothers you, something that you would want to undo, something that you would want to remove. So those two in combination make it that there's a chatzitza midoraita. Rubo, ve'enu makpid alav, if you have that robe of a chatzitza that covers the robe of the head or the robe of the body, but it doesn't bother you, eino chutzetz. Then mina Torah midoraita, it's not chutzetz. Vigazru. Nevertheless, the chachamim are gozera, rubo sheino makbid, mishum rubo amakbid. They're gozer on a robe that you're not makbid on, because of the possibility that it's a robe that you are makbid upon, and therefore they made it into a chatzitza midorabanan. Vigazru amituto amakbid, and they're also gozer where you're makbid on whatever dirt or issue it is, even though it's a miut, it's the minority of the head or the minority of the body that's covered in this item, but it's something that bothers you and you want to remove it, there also they were gozer as a chatzitza mishum rubo hamakpid, because of the case where there's rov and there's hakpada. What's clear here, and we'll see this in a second in the Gemara, is that midoraita, you need both. You need rov and hakpada. Midorabanan, if you have either one of them, they were gozer atu. If you have rubo without hakpada, or if you have hakpada without rubo, in that case, the Rabbanan said it's a chatzitza because we don't want you coming to Rubo HaMakpid. So Mar says, V'ligzornami amyuto she'enu makpid. So why aren't you? Goes there on the fourth permutation, which is the possibility that it's a miut and you're not makpid. Mar says, Mishum miyuto HaMakpid. Because maybe then you'll be a case where it's a miut and you're makpid. So when it's miut and enu makpid, maybe it'll be, we should go there up to a case where you are makpid. Mar says, He gufa gzera v'anonikum nigzor gzera l'gzera. That becomes a gzera l'gzera. Already, miut hamakpid is not a real problem midoraita. That's only a rabbinic problem of a gzera atu rubo hamakpid. So now you want to be gozer about miut she'enu makpid atu miut shemakpid, which is only a gzera because of rubo hamakpid. That's already two steps removed. It's a double derivative. In that case, we don't make a gzera l'gzera. Amar Rav, nida bizmana enu tovelet elo belayla. A nida who's going to the mikveh in a timely fashion goes to the mikveh at night, meaning that's the proper way to do it because she has to count 7 days of tumah from the first sighting. No matter whether she is sighting dam or not sighting dam, she's tumeah for 7 days. Once she completes a full 7 days, into the eighth day already, she can go to the mikveh. So that's the night after the seventh day. That's when she go to the mikveh, but she can't go any earlier. Shelo bizmanah. If she's going after the seventh day, meaning that after the eighth day, ninth day, any later, ben bayom, ben balayla. She can go during the day or the night because it's no longer an issue anymore. There's no problem of her going to the mikveh too early because she's already past the threshold point of 7 days. Now she's gone through 8 days. So she can go in the middle of the eighth day. She can go at night, which is already the ninth day. She can go anytime she needs to because she's already completed a full 7 days and it's not a problem. Whether she goes on time to the mikvah or doesn't go on time to the mikvah, she doesn't go, elo balayla. She has to go at night. This is an important takanat chachamim because her daughter might learn from her. The children are astute and the children start to realize that their mother is going to the mikvah and they take note of when the mother is going to the mikvah. And sometimes they see her going to the mikvah at night. Sometimes they see her going to the mikvah during the day. And they might come to the mistaken conclusion that you can go to the mikveh during the day for nida. And that would be a problem because then you'd really enter yourself into a chiyuv karet, which is if she goes to the mikveh in the middle of the seventh day, this daughter who saw her mother go during the daytime, there was the eighth day or the ninth day, and she wouldn't have known that it was the eighth or ninth day. She just thought she was in nida going to the mikveh. She doesn't know exactly when her mother became tumeah, and she's not counting or so careful about it. So she goes when she emulates her mother's behavior and she's a nida, she goes to the mikveh on the seventh day during the day. She does that, she's not Torah, and she's still a nida, and there's a chiyuv karet and problems with tumah and tahara, because you can't go to the mikveh until you completed a full 7 days of nida. So because of that fear of the girls learning from their mothers to go to the mikveh during the day, then we insisted that the mother always go to the mikveh at night in order to prevent that problem. Ve'af Rav Hadarbe, and even Rav backed away from his position over here. Damar Rabbi Chiya Ba'ashi Amar Rav, we're quoting the name of Rav, Nida, Ben Bizmana, Ben Shalom Bizmana, Enu Tovelet, Elo Balayla, Mishum Srach Bita. So we see Rav picking up the same position as Rabbi Yochanan, and he backed away from his position, assuming that the problem is that the daughters might learn from the mother. Even though technically it's allowed, we don't allow her to do it because we don't want this passed down to the next generation that you're allowed to go during the mikvah during the day. But that's only true when it's shelo bizmana, it's not true bizmana. And the daughter might extrapolate what she sees from her mother of going during the day to the seventh day itself, where it would be problematic. Itkin Rav Idi ben Narsh, the mitzvah b'yoma. Rav Idi in Narsh established a practice of allowing the women to go to the mikveh during the day, b'yoma tamnaya, but only on the eighth day. He wouldn't let them do it at the seventh day, because that's obviously not going to be successful. But on the eighth day, he allowed them to go to the mikveh during the day, b'shumar yavoto, because of the lions, or the fear of the animals. The mikveh were obviously in places that were private, in places that were not frequented by people in order to have tzniut, but that also raised the possibility of there being wild animals or dangerous for the women to go there. Because of the danger of the women going to those locations, he allowed them to go to the mikveh on the eighth day. V'achar Yaakov v'Papunia mishum ganve. He had the same practice in Papunia that allowed the women to go to the mikveh on the eighth day because of the marauders or thieves that were around at night, which would be problematic for the women. And therefore, he allowed them to go to the mikveh on the next day. Rav Yehuda v'Pumpudita, and we see a similar practice in Pumpudita by Rav Yehuda, Mishum Tzina, because it was too cold. It was freezing at night, and the women couldn't go to the mikveh at night because of the cold, or they wouldn't go to the mikveh properly because of the cold. Therefore, he allowed them to go during the day when it was warmer out in order to facilitate their ability to go to the mikveh without it being too cold or too dangerous for them to go. Rava v'Mechuza, so here we're going through all the different cities in Bavel, or major centers in Bavel, and the Moradatra in each of these cities is paskening in a similar fashion. And Rava did it in Mechuzah Mishum Abulai. Rashi over here brings two possibilities as to what the Abulai are. Either Shoarei Ha'ir, they were the gatekeepers of the city, and they were non-Jews. And so that was dangerous for the women, either because they followed them out, or they knew the women were isolated out there when they went out to the mikveh. And so that was the danger, or they closed the gates before the women returned, and that was the danger. Or, Lishna Achrina, is Binyanim Shel Me'arot. There were these cave-like structures that were on the way to the mikveh, and they were not visible at night because of the dark, and therefore it was a danger that the women would fall into these caves or into these cisterns, and that would be dangerous for the women, and therefore he permitted them to go to the mikveh during the day, on the eighth day. Amalei Rapapa, L'Rova, U'L'Abaye. Rapapa says to Rav and Abaye, who are his Rebbeim, Michtei. Hayidna, today, kulu safek zavot shavinu rabbanan. Today we made all the women be like a safek ziva. That's what we saw on yesterday's daf, that Benot Yisrael echmiru al atzman, that Benot Yisrael accepted upon themselves that any time they saw tipat dam kechardal, yoshvot aleh shivat nekiyim, that they keep shivat nekiyim as if they are zava gdola, in order to avoid all problems of mixing up nida and zava. And therefore, they kept this practice to always have Shiva Nikim. Now, with regards to a Zavah Gidola, over there, you can go to the mikveh during the day. Nida can only go to the mikveh at night because she has to have a full 7 days of Tumah, and then only after the 7th day has elapsed, she can go to the mikveh. On the other hand, with regards to a Zavah Gidola, as well as a Shomer Yom Keneged Yom, Mikset Yom is Kekulo, and therefore it would suffice to go to the mikveh during the day. So what Rav Papa is querying of Rav and Abaye is, today, the practice of our women is to make themselves like a Zavah Gdola, and they all keep Shivnikim. So therefore, Litavinu b'yomam adishviyah. Why can't they go to the mikvah on the 7th day of their Shivnikim? They should be able to go to the mikvah on the 7th day during the day, because they are a Zavah Gdola, and a Zavah Gdola has the right to go to the mikvah during the day, even mi'ikar halacha, and you don't have to worry about waiting till the nighttime and having all these dispensations that are being given because of the problems of going to the mikveh at night by Nida. They answered him, Mishum Rabbi Shimon. Problem is, Rabbi Shimon, the Tanya, Achar Titar, says about a Zavah Gdola, after she has her Shivinikim, she is Tahor. Achar, Achar Lekulan. When it says afterwards, she is Tahorah, that means after the completion of the entire 7 days. Shalei Tumah, Mafseket Benehem. If there's any Tumah during her Shivinikim, it undermines her Shivinikim. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Achar Tidhar, Achar Maseh Tidhar. After you've reached the point of the 7th day, counting that 7th day into Mikset Hayom Kekulo, then she can become Tahor. So that means that, of course, you can't say any tumah during any of that period of time. But on the morning of the seventh day, you're allowed to go to the mikveh. So then, why don't we? Aval amru chachamim asur lasod kein. Nevertheless, the chachamim did not allow it or permit it. Shema diavodi de safek. Because there's a risk that she will enter into a safek or have a problem, which is that after she goes to the mikveh, technically she is tohora. And she might be together with her husband at that point in time, which would be permissible. The only problem is you have a risk. If she has any sighting of dam after she goes to the mikveh on the seventh day, it not only undermines her going to the mikveh, it undermines her entire shivnikim. So therefore, if a husband is together with his wife after she goes to the mikveh, after mitzvah de yom kukulo on the seventh day of the shivnikim, you're in a huge risk scenario, which is that if she has any sighting of dam during the remainder of that day, it will undermine everything she's done. Similarly, with shomer yom keneged yom. For that reason, the Chachamim said she should not go to the mikveh on the seventh day, or b'mitzvah de yom kukulo, or really, she shouldn't be together with her husband on that day, because of the fact that it would be risky to be together with her husband. And Tosfot over here spends time saying that it seems like the problem here is that you're not allowed to go to the mikveh, which is, tzarich lomar asula sotken litbo. Problem is not that you can't be together for tashmish, because that's obviously a problem, because that's not shiavodi de safek. That's not someone who'll come into a safek. They will have a vadai problem if she has a sighting of blood. Whereas going to the mikveh only creates a safek problem. And therefore, Tosfot favors saying that the chashash here, or the problem here, is that we don't allow her to go to the mikveh because of that problem, not we don't allow her to be together with her husband. Although then he brings an alternative view that maybe going to the mikveh is mutar, but they were machmir to not allow tevilah because shema yavodi de tashmish amita. It's another way to formulate it, which is to say that the real chashash is tashmish, and therefore we don't let you go to the mikveh because that might facilitate tashmish. The other way he formulated it is simply that the problem is we don't want you going to the mikveh because of the safek that could arise from going to the mikveh. Nothing to do with tashmish, because tashmish is obviously asur. So those are two ways to formulate it according to the Balei Tosafot. And Tosafot brings over here that mishum srach bita. That problem of srach bita is leka lefrushe de davka binida asur. Don't explain that it's only by nida that it's asur, huh? But by a zava, even if her daughter sees that it's the seventh day, there's no isu doraita, but rather a chashash, because Rabbi Shimon haleka lemeimar. Don't say that, because the chashash of Rabbi Shimon is only a chashash on the seventh day. After the seventh day, it's not a chashash anymore. And if the chashash is only by nida, not by a zavag gedola, then if it was the eighth day or the ninth day for a woman today, after her shivinikim, she should be able to go during the day, because you don't have srach bida, that's only relevant by nida. You don't have Rabbi Shimon, that's only relevant by the seventh day. So you might have thought to say that this has no application today, and women who don't go after their shivinikim, right, immediately afterwards, they could go during the day. Tosfot says that's the wrong conclusion, because all of the Amoraim here, like Rava, were post the Chumra of Rabbi Zeira, and therefore their women were keeping shivinikim, and despite the fact they were keeping shivinikim, Rava had to come up with a reason to allow the women to go on the eighth day to the mikveh, and not because simply it was a zavag dola shelo bizmana. You see from that even by a zavag dola, the ikar din is to go at night, even when she's going shelo bizmana. And the only heter not to go during the night and to go during the day is if there are extenuating circumstances, like are noted by all these amoraim over here, where there's danger to the woman or problems for the woman. And therefore, Tosfot concludes, afilu bizmana zeh, asur lidvol ben bechet ben betet, even at shelo bizmana, you can't go during the day. The only kula that the Rabbeinu Tam says is, mi omer Rabbeinu Tam, shink peda rakshik tashuv de beita shia laila. That the chashash of here is not that she has to leave her house at night, rather she just needs to return to her house at night. So she doesn't have to leave late at night, because it's not an issue if she goes to the mikveh during the daytime or late in the day approaching darkness, because there's no chashash that her daughter would then extrapolate that to allow her to go during the day, because the daughter will always be aware of the fact that the woman only came home at night. She would never pay attention or focus on the fact that maybe the tefillah happened a little before that, and then she came home at night. But if she just sees her mother coming home at night, then she would be aware of the fact that it's at night, and therefore she won't come to make that mistake. So that is a kula that the Rabbeinu Tam allows. It's just that she has to return to her house at night. She doesn't have to leave the house at night. But otherwise, the women are not allowed to go to the mikveh during the day, even when it's not the seventh day. Although, he says, makom sheyesh li'arei mipritzei ha'ir o meganavim, if there are dangers to the women going to the mikveh at night because of the lowlives that are hanging around or the thieves that are running around, then like in our sugi over here, there is permissibility to go during the day, but obviously only after the seventh day has been totally completed, meaning into the eighth day or the ninth day, there she can go during the daytime. All right, now we move on to the next issue with regards to getting ready for the mikveh, which is Amar Rav Huna, Isha Chofefet Bechat B'Shabbat. A woman can clean herself, scrub herself down, in that she washes her hair, shampoos her hair, cleans her body, makes sure that she has no chatzitzot on Sunday. V'tovelet B'Shlishi B'Shabbat. And then she can go to the mikveh on Tuesday. The span that we're speaking about here is she does it during the day on Sunday. And Yom Shlishi, Tuesday, doesn't mean Tuesday during the day. It means the night before Tuesday, Monday night, the night after Monday, which is the beginning of Tuesday in the Hebrew calendar. And therefore, she can do the chafifa on Sunday and then go to the mikveh on the night after Monday, which is Tuesday night, because she came. Because we find a similar case, Isha Chofefet B'Erev Shabbat. A woman can clean herself on Erev Shabbat, B'Tovelet B'Motzei Shabbat, if she's going to the mikveh immediately after Shabbat. She can't do the chafifa on Shabbat itself. So we allow her to do it earlier on Friday. So the distance in time between Friday, doing it in Friday before Shabbat, and going to mikveh Motzei Shabbat is the same distance that you would have by doing it on Sunday and then going to the mikveh on the night after Monday. And the exact nature of what this chafifa is really a machloket vishonim in the Gemara Baba Kama, where the Gemara over there speaks of et rachatsu et bisaro b'mayim. And through there they learn that et bisaro b'mayim means that the body must be in the water and there may not be anything that's chutzeitz between the body and the water. And then et bisaro is a riboy to tell you not only the basar, the goof, but the hair itself. And then there's a requirement of chafifa. Bali et Tosfot over there say the chafifa means the combing out of the hair, that one has to make sure, even though midoraita, all you have to do is be sure that there are no knots in the hair. That's what says that the Takanat Ezra, based on that Gemara in Baba Kama, is that the woman has to comb out her hair. Other Rishonim say, even though that is true, it's still a good idea to wash the remainder of the body with hot water, not just the head. And still others, like the Aruch, think that the word chafifa has to do with shikshuch, friction, or rubbing. And that's a requirement that one go over their entire body and their hair and rub or scrub it to the point where there are no chatzitzot left, where there's nothing that would separate between the woman's body and the mikveh. And that is the general practice, which is that women, when preparing for the mikveh, make sure to take a hot bath and to comb out their hair and to ensure that there are no chatzitzot both in their hair and on their body. And again, Isha chofefet b'echad b'shabbat v'tovelet b'rivi b'shabbat. A woman can do her cleaning and her removing of all chatzitzot on Sunday, and then tovelet b'riviv Shabbat, and then go to the mikveh on Wednesday. It would be the night after Tuesday, which would be already Wednesday. She can go to the mikveh that night, which is a day later. Shekein, because we have a similar scenario by Isha Chofefet B'Erev Shabbat, the tovelet b'motzei Yom Tov shechaliot achar Shabbat. When you have Yom Tov that comes immediately after Shabbat, she can't do chafifa on Shabbat. She can't do chafifa on Yom Tov, and she's going to the mikveh on Motzei Yom Tov on Sunday night. She's going to go to the mikveh. So she allowed to clean herself and get herself ready on Friday, Erev Shabbat, and then go to the mikveh on Motzei Yom Tov, which is Sunday night. That differential in time is the same as cleaning herself or doing the chafifa on Sunday, and then going to the mikveh on Tuesday night, which is Wednesday. And in addition, Isha Chofefet B'Echad B'Shabbat, a woman can do the cleansing and the removal of all chatzitzot and checking on Sunday, v'tovelet b'chamishi b'shabbat, and go to the mikveh on Thursday, meaning the night after Wednesday, which is Thursday. Shekein, because you have a similar scenario. Shekein, isha chofefet b'erev Shabbat, a woman can prepare herself on Erev Shabbat for the mikveh, v'tovelet b'motzei shnei yomim tovim shavash shana, shechaliot achar Shabbat, and she can go to the mikveh on Motzei Yom Tov shavash shana, which is always 2 days. Even in Eretz Yisrael, it was 2 days of Yom Tov. So you have Shabbat, and then you have 2 days of Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah. She can't be Chofefet on Shabbat, not the first day of Rosh Hashanah, not the second day of Rosh Hashanah. Therefore, only on Motzei Rosh Hashanah, which came after Shabbat, which is on the night after Monday night, she goes to the mikveh, even though she was doing the chafifa on Erev Shabbat, when it was last permissible for her to do the chafifa. So similarly, that same span of time is true if she does a chafifa on Sunday, and then goes to the mikveh on the night after Wednesday, which is Thursday. So that should also be permissible. That is the view that is brought by Rav Huna. Rav Chista disagrees. Rav Chista Amar, Kulu Amrinan, what you said is correct with regards to all of these statements. Shekein lo amrinan, but we do not extrapolate those statements. And that is because hecha de efshar, efshar. Where it's possible to do the chafifa immediately before she goes to the mikveh. There we insist on that happening. Hecha de lo efshar. In cases where it's not possible, lo efshar, then it's not possible. If it's not possible, she can't do it. Therefore, you're right. If it's Motzei Shabbat, she does the cleansing and she does the check and all the cleaning on Erev Shabbat. If it's going to be Yom Tov after Shabbat, she doesn't Erev Shabbat and only goes to the mikveh on Motzei Yom Tov on the Sunday night. If it's Rosh Hashanah immediately after Shabbat, she does the cleansing on Erev Shabbat, but then she doesn't go to the mikveh until Monday night after you have Shabbat and 2 days of Yom Tov. But that's all because in those cases, there's no other solution to the problem. On the other hand, when you're dealing with the regular weekdays, when you're dealing with the Sunday, and then there are weekdays afterwards, we're not going to allow you to have that same span of time elapse where it's not necessary. Rav Huna, you're extrapolating from things that are efshar, impossible to do any other way, to examples that are efshar, that are possible to do. And that's just not a correct limud or extrapolation. And therefore, what you said about the core statements of the halakha are true, but with regards to you're extrapolating it to cases where it's efshar to do it with the chafifa, the cleansing and the shampooing and the removal of the chatzitzot of the woman can be done immediately before she goes to the mikveh, and that we will insist on.
He
says that I agree with Rav Huna fundamentally that you can't extrapolate. In the case where it's not possible, then we allow her that dispensation, both by Shabbat and by Shabbat and Yom Tov. And we even allow you to extrapolate that to Sunday, going to the mikveh on Tuesday, going to the mikveh on Wednesday. But the exception of one case, which is the case where she did the cleansing on Sunday, and then goes to the mikveh on Thursday, meaning on the night after Wednesday. Thursday, that is too far away. There you can't extrapolate it. Because she has the option to do the chafifa on the night and then go to the mikvah on that night. Because Rav Yemer says it's just too far apart. And therefore, even in the case we have Yom Tov of Rosh Hashanah that falls after Shabbat, we're not going to let you do the chafifa on Erev Shabbat and then wait till Motzei Yom Tov, Sheni Shel Rosh Hashanah and go to the mikveh. We're going to tell you to do the chafifa on Motzei Yom Tov, and then go to the mikveh on that night itself. Doresh Mereimar, Remeimar holds Hilchot Rav Chista, Ukedemar Taretz Rav Yemar. The halacha is like Rav Chista, the way that Rav Yemar explained to him, and in Rashi says over here, it basically means that the halacha is like Rav Chista b'chumrato, all the chumras of Rav Chista, and Ketemaretz Rav Yemar, and the chumra of Rav Yemar. You have the chumrot of Rav Chista, which means it only applies to cases where it's impossible. Are you allowed to be makdim, the cleansing, before you go to the mikveh? And you also have the chumra of Rav Yemar, which is that when it comes to Yom Tov Rosh Hashanah that falls out after Shabbat, you do not have permission to do it on Erev Shabbat and then wait the 3 days to elapse and then go on Motzei Yom Tov Sheni Shel Rosh Hashanah. You have to actually do it on the Motzei Yom Tov Sheni Shel Rosh Hashanah. You have to do the chafifa, the cleansing, on that night and then go to the mikveh immediately afterwards, and therefore the halacha is the chumra like Rav Chista and like Rav Yemar. Ibailuhu isha ma'u shetachuf balayla v'titbol balayla. Can a woman cleanse herself, wash her hair, take off all the chatzitzot at night, and then go to the mikveh on that night? It seems to be that that would be the optimal way to do it, which is that right before she goes to the mikveh, she does all the cleansing and the checking to make sure that she has no chatzitzot. So why would you think that that's a problem? So a possibility is that we feel that she's under too much pressure to get to the mikveh, and therefore she doesn't do a proper check or a proper cleansing, because she has to both cleanse herself, get all the chatzitzot off, go to the mikveh, and then get home that night. It's a little bit too much pressure on the woman, and she won't do it properly. It seems from this that the optimal way to do it is that she does the cleansing and the checking for the chatzitzot during the day, when she has plenty of time. And then she only goes to the mikveh at night. The question now is, what happens if she does both of them at night? Is that problematic? Marzutra oser. Marzutra says she's under too much pressure and it's going to lead to bad results, and therefore it's asur. Rav Chinina Misura Shari. Whereas Rav Chinina Misura says it was mutar. Amale Rav Ado, and the way that the girsa is in the Bach, it's Rav Ada Misura, the Marzutra. Wasn't this the case with the wife of my father, who was the Reish Galuta, the Ikut, that he had some altercation with his wife, meaning his mother? According to the way that the Bach has the Girsa, Ravada Misura is saying this about his father, that he got into an altercation with his wife, and his wife was refusing to go to the mikveh that night. Azal Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, that you say. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak entered into the fray in order to placate the wife of the Reish Gadluta and to convince her to go to the mikveh. Va'amar Alei, and she says to him when he comes over to placate her, Ma'ite Hashta, why are you getting involved now in order to push me to go to the mikveh now? Tiske Aiti Lemachar. It'd be enough if I go to the mikvah tomorrow. Yada Maika Maritle. And he understood, or he was able to intuit what she was saying in her response over here, which is that the wife of the Reish Galuta was saying, there's no purpose in you coming to placate me now. I can't go to the mikvah anyway because I didn't do a chafifa during the day. I'm not ready to be able to go to the mikvah now. So even if you succeed at placating me, I'm not going to the mikvah tonight anyway. So why don't you just come back tomorrow? And Rabbi Yitzchak intuited from what she was saying that that was the problem. And he says to her, Amar Dode Chasart, you don't have enough cauldrons, you don't have enough pots, or Yorot, as the Mesorah Shaz presents the Girsa, Tashtike Chasart, you don't have enough stools on which to sit. That's the way Rashi seems to translate it. Others suggest that they were Karot. They were bowls or types of utensils that were used for pouring the water on the woman. Avdei Chasart, you don't have enough maidservants to help you out, meaning that you have sufficient help and sufficient means to do the cleansing tonight in order to be ready to go to the mikveh tonight. You're not going to have a problem. You're able to do that. And based on the case law here, you would have one of two conclusions, depending on what you see the girsa as being. If you see the girsa as being that it's Rav Adam Misura saying to this Tamar Zutra, he's bringing this as evidence of the fact that you can do the cleansing at night, you can do the chafifa at night, and you can go to the mikveh at night. On the other hand, if you have the girsa that we have, which is that Rav Ada is saying it to Rav Chanina Mesura, who is matir, that means he's bringing it as case law or evidence of the fact that you're not allowed to do it. It was only the wife of the Reish Galuta that was permitted to do this because she had sufficient means and help to allow her to do it without having too much pressure on her, and therefore it would get done correctly. But had it not been for that, a regular woman, it would seem, would be problematic. And therefore, it's a question on the position of Chinam Misura that was matir. So depending on who you think is speaking over here, the case can either be evidence of the fact that you're allowed to do the chafifa at night and go to the mikveh at night, or it could be evidence of the fact that that's only true by a unique woman like the wife of the Reish Galuta, but it's not true for the common folk, for the layperson, because they don't have sufficient means or the help that they need in order to do the chafifa in a expeditious manner that won't make them under pressure to get to the mikveh that night. As far as the Yorot are concerned, what the purpose of these cauldrons or heating up the water was, the Oruch suggests that simply the way that we explained it, that it is to allow her to wash herself and cleanse herself because the hot water is necessary in order to remove the chatzitzot and the problems in her hair when she washes her hair or her body, and that's why the water was heated up. On the other hand, the Rosh brings, in the name of the Rabbeinu Chananel, that they were heating up the water to put into the mikveh, in order to make it so that the waters of the mikveh were not so cold, and to warm up the mikveh in order that the woman can go to the mikveh at night. Now this obviously has major nafkaminot as to whether one is allowed to heat the waters of the mikveh or pour hot water into the waters of the mikveh. There are those rishonim, there are ashmishans and there are benutam that were against this because of the problems of merkzeot, and it starts to look like a bathhouse rather than a mikveh, and then you come to the confusion that women might think that a bathhouse is okay, even though it's only a mikveh that's okay. As we saw earlier, with the klei cheres, that we don't allow you to do things that simulate the situation that you would find in a bathhouse. Whereas there are other rishonim, like the Rav Yoh, that suggest that this is evidence of the fact that you're allowed to heat up the water, you're allowed to pour hot water in order for the woman to go to the mikveh. And both the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah bring down both positions, the Mekilim and the Osrim. Shulchan Aruch brings down the Osrim as a Yesh Misha Omer, and the Ramah brings on that Yesh Mekilim, and he says, better to be Machmir, Elaim Kain. It's a case where they have the minhag of the practice to warm up the waters. Obviously, where one lives might be influential as to whether there was a necessity for heating up the water, and how difficult it would be if you did not warm up the water, as we saw before. There were Amoraim that allowed the women to go to the mikveh the next day because of the cold. If that would be the case, then obviously we would let you warm up the waters of the mikveh or pour hot water in there in order to facilitate going to the mikveh at night rather than during the day. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Samachet Amud Aleph.